heard her sing, it don't worry me. It don't worry me. You may say I ain't free. It don't worry me. Everybody, don't worry me. It don't worry me.
Hey, welcome to the Moviegoers. It's a Sunday morning here out in Los Angeles. I'm with the regular guys.
Hello, this is Andy. Hello, this is Greg.
And I'm Phil. And last time we talked big Hollywood movies with Man of Steel, so we thought we'd change it up this time with the movie The Way, Way Back. Sort of an American indie film, I guess it could be classified as an indie film, but a much smaller movie than Man of Steel or other summer affairs like Pacific Rim. And The Way, Way Back is a coming-of-age tale with Steve Carell, Toni Collette, and Sam Rockwell. And I didn't know that much about it going in. I think Andy had wanted to see it or was interested in seeing it. So, Andy, why don't you...
Well, yeah, I wanted to see it. I was, excited to see something that wasn't the big action and, you know, in this summer season. And I hadn't seen the trailer or anything, but I'd read, you know, because it was one of these movies that came out of Sundance and was picked up by Fox Searchlight. So it got a lot of, like, industry, you know, press from Sundance. So I had certainly heard of it and knew a little bit about it. And, yeah, figured it was probably pretty smack in that, like, and I think it's even a little outmoded now, but sort of the old Sundance, like, what people think of when they think of a Sundance movie of, like, Little Miss Sunshine, like, that era of Sundance, not, like, the Sex, Lies, and Videotapes. Yeah. But, I mean, there was a bunch of them, a little bit, like, I mean, it was sort of the height of the dramedy, I would say, in a way, is, you know, the Sundance, and often a coming-of-age thing.
Thoughts on the movie?
Oh, I'll let Greg start off.
Oh, okay, on thoughts of the movie? Yeah, well, no, I liked it. It won me over. Like, I didn't think it was terrific, but I enjoyed it. I laughed. You know, it's light. You know, it's not profound or anything like that. But yeah, I enjoyed it. It was just a decent night at the movies. That's how I would sort of classify it. I mean, it was a first film by these guys who are like actors.
But aren't they proven Hollywood screenwriters?
I don't think so. I think
they won an Oscar last year, but that doesn't mean they're proven.
Well, they had written... Okay, but I know the story of this. They won the Oscar for The Descendants.
Right.
But let's put a little asterisk by it because they wrote a script for The Descendants when Alexander Payne was going to produce the movie.
Oh, okay.
Then Alexander Payne couldn't, for whatever reason, probably couldn't get the movie he wanted to make, which I think is Nebraska, going. So he decided he wanted to direct The Descendants. And of course, it's based off a book. So he went and rewrote the entire script. Not because he said, this is what I read, not because he said it was a bad script, but because that's just how he works, which you can get. And so the movie that Alexander Payne made was an Alexander Payne movie, but these guys had done a draft of the script and
just read it, and it was
But for WGA, you know, when they look at credit determination, the first draft kind of does get overweighted, and also the fact that it was based on a book.
Yeah, it was going to be the same character.
So they ended up sharing credit for the thing, but it wasn't like they really worked with him to make The Descendant. That's just to characterize it correctly. They won the Oscar, but they had also...
Well, we should say who these guys are. Like,
They're Nate actors.
Faxon and Jim Rash.
Faxon and Rash. You know, they're
Rash
actors.
Rash is on Community, plays like the prince of... Well, I mean, not... What is the name for...
Yeah, I don't know.
The head of the university or, you know, I mean, principal's not the right word, but or
Dean.
Head of the community. Yeah, Dean. It's Dean. Yeah the Dean.
And the other guy's an actor, too. I saw him in that show, Ben and Kate. He was, like, the star of that. They're, they're kind of, like, TV guys. And I think they might be, like, Groundlings people. I'm guessing.
Oh, no, absolutely. They're from one of those.
Yeah.
Like, Groundlings, UCB, one of those places. Yeah.
And so this was their directing debut. And, yeah, I I enjoyed it. So I can start off that way.
Phil?
I'm a little bit surprised to hear that you like this movie. I really had a distaste for it. And yeah, I do think it lessened as the movie went along. But I thought the beginning, especially the first act, was so unpleasant. And Steve Carell's character throughout the movie is so unpleasant that I had a real distaste for the movie that it couldn't overcome. Yeah, there's some nice, you know, feel-good scenes as you would want in a coming-of-age movie like this. But the beginning, I could not bear to be around these people. And it wasn't just the Steve Carell. I found the Allison Janney character to be completely obnoxious. The way she treats her kid, the kid whose story it is, I don't remember the character's name.
Duncan.
But he plays it like a cipher too. It's so affected at the beginning.
What do you mean when you say cipher?
A blank idiot. He's so over the top in being sort of like a shy teenager,
mm-hmm.
that it didn't feel, it was all like so one-dimensional to me. And the first act, the movie eventually gets to a water park, and that's kind of should be the meat of the movie. Yeah. It takes forever to get to the water park.
Yeah.
And by then, I wasn't enjoying the world or these characters. I found them all to be really ugly. Except Toni Collette does do a good job, but she doesn't have that much to play with.
Agreed, she doesn't have that much.
But the other adults are also ugly and unpleasant, and then I found the teenagers to all be ugly and unpleasant.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, from somebody who liked the movie, you know, because I liked it, I mean, it's very easy to say, yeah, that's, you know, I mean, you're like, yeah, you obviously didn't like that take on it, but that was very much like the obvious point that of the movie was these adults are on, you know, it's even a line in the movie that they're on spring break and acting like total idiots, and the kids are kind of left to their own devices.
The point was creating the contrast between the Carell world of those parents and the water park world of different kinds of adults, in, I would put it in quotes, because the water park people are sort of, you know, these people with like kind of arrested development and, you know, sort of living this loose, you know, kind of fun life. And so, yeah, that, I mean, that was sort of the structural conceit of the movie. I guess what I would counter in my experience being different from yours, though, is the Allison Janney character. Because I agree the Carell character is a jerk, and I agree that the teenage character is just sort of this blank nothing at the beginning. And
the other teenagers, though, at the beginning, like the good-looking girl. There's a scene on the beach early on where the main character stomps out on the beach. He, you know, doesn't want to do it.
Right.
And then these four or five, you know, attractive teenagers are all on the beach. I thought that scene was so clumsy and staged. And, I mean, just even the way he's planted on the beach sitting, it just felt so stiff.
Yeah, I bought it. You know, I mean, maybe I know that situation or something, but I mean, like it was a real, like it was real enough to me. Yeah, and
it wasn't
the girls
the situation
were nothing great.
It was in that scene the execution, and then the girls are just playing it so bitchy, good-looking teenagers would play it. It was just so right on the nose that it felt like a generic.
I guess, but I also liked, but it also set up, you know, the blonde love interest character, like good, that like
a little different,
as you know, just that she was, I mean, that was the whole point of the scene, was setting up that, like, you know, she's not in line with these characters, or, you know, the first inklings of it. And, you know, it was a simple, like, way to get there. But it didn't jump out to me as totally inadequate, or, you know, it's certainly not the scene I think of when I think of this movie at all.
Yeah.
But
well, I just want to point out one thing that, like, this movie grew on me, like and I sort of had a similar, maybe almost, I was maybe not as hard as you on the first act, Phil, is what you're saying, but like, I wasn't in love with the movie from the beginning, but I would say that I actually liked the Allison Janney like introduction. Yeah. It was just this like rat-tat-tat-tat kind of like fun. I took that as sort of like a introduction to the fun of the movie. And then of course that gets ratcheted up once they're in the water park. And obviously like the Sam Rockwell character who, you know, in my opinion, yeah, he kind of makes the movie. Like that is what, you know, those are sort of the marks where I was like, okay, you know, that's what I'm enjoying watching in the movie.
Yeah, I had the same thing with the kid where it felt like, wow, this guy's the main, like you even had that, there was the scene where he's on the beach and then walking away from the beach. And like, you know, he's the main character, but at the same time, you're like, oh, yeah, this is the first time we're going to be alone with this guy. Yeah. And like, yeah, the kid doesn't say much for the first half hour of the movie. But then, yeah, it grew on me where, you know, I got into him, you know, like, you know, letting loose, you know, becoming himself a little bit with the water park people. Like, I got into that.
There's so many coming of age films that take on, you know, this sort of formula.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, this one did not compare for me. Like, once we got to the water park, I'm like, oh, this Adventureland popped into my mm-hmm. head that they, and this isn't close to sort of the detailed emotional nuance of that. And then Perks of Being a Wallflower, I liked that one a lot more. It had more powerful emotional scenes for me in that movie.
I mean, it also might just be a taste. Like, this is much more of a comedy than either of those movies.
Yeah,
this is a
comedy. Yeah, those are dramas.
I didn't find this to be a comedy. I guess because the first act is set up, it's so ugly that I didn't find it to be
laughed a lot. And I mean, the theater I was in was laughing a lot. So it was
I mean, it's definitely a comedy. Like, I mean, it might
have... They might want it to be. People were not... laughing in my screen.
I mean, every time the guy Jim Rash was on, the side characters got laughs.
Of course,
every time they were on.
The guy, you're laughing at what's the eye condition? Lazy eye. Yeah, I mean that's a
easy but movie. It was enjoyable to laugh.
But you're laughing at this guy, and a lot of the time at his mother making fun of him. Like you didn't find that.
No, I didn't find it ugly. I found it I found it to be fun. You know, I wasn't, like, judging these characters of, like, you know, oh, these are, like, this is so awful, or, you know, I was just enjoying kind of this guy's, you know, floating through this world, the Duncan character, the main character.
I mean, he's sort of an abused kid. Like, I mean, that's what I think the first act
abused.
Is...
Let's you know, find a different way. I mean, abused... You know, he's put upon by Steve Carell.
The first scene of the movie is 5 minutes of this adult picking on this kid, and it's 5 minutes.
Yeah, but it was also, I think what you're also getting there, and even in the first act, is like, and what Steve, I guess, Steve Carell's an asshole in the movie, but the one underlying note is, this kid does need a huge wake-up call. This kid is close to, like... going off the edge of being a total social outcast. And, like, he needs something. And Steve Carell is not... Like, Sam Rockwell is the right way he needs it. But Steve Carell, like, understands, you know... He still understands, like, this kid is in real trouble and, like, needs to be woken up.
He needs a kick in the ass. He's sort of the alpha... So he's sort of, like, the you know... The heart that sort of trying to take on this role of, like, the... you know, tough love kind of father figure,
right.
Which is he's attempting to do, and he's doing it poorly, basically.
Yeah.
He's not doing it like...
But the Steve Carell and Toni Collette relationship with the kid is sort of the meat of the story. The water park actually becomes more of a B plot to the Steve Carell. Like, that's sort of the meat of... the story, because there is a lot paid to the problems between Steve Carell and Toni Collette, and the problems of these other adults.
See, I would say that is the B story.
Water park comes in and finally adds a little levity and breath to the movie. And yeah, I do agree it does get better, but the meat of the movie is still this dynamic with Steve Carell. And every time he came on screen, he was so one-dimensional.
Like, that's objectively off. Like, the meat isn't it's the kid with both Toni Collette, Steve Carell, and Sam Rockwell. It's a three-way thing. Sure. So, like, but, you know, the family dynamic is ultimately, I guess, probably, like, the A story. But, A story, B story is a very, like, TV sort of thing. And it's not quite that. It's a little more of, like, this split because they're kind of these parallel things.
It's a coming-of-age story. Yeah. I mean, we already said, like, that's what, you know, very much what it is. So, I guess.
But it does, I mean, I guess, to Phil's point, it does, like, begin and end, like, the biggest notes, although you could say the climax is at the water park, obviously, like, but the beginning and end are the family dynamic, mm-hmm. you know, that and seals the movie.
Yeah, the emotional core of that is, and in a way, Toni Collette and her son becoming closer, because she's been distant to him. I mean, you set up with bookends of them in the car.
Right.
And
yeah, but that's a nice thing. But still, like, even if the mom never comes back to the kid, like, I would still have, like, a positive feeling coming out of that movie because, it's this typical, like, the kid has changed and, like, the most emotional moments for the movie all happen at the water park. Like, him and the Sam Rockwell hug was, like, that is a tough, tough, like, sort of thing to do, like, without being, you know, step, like, it's such a tightrope walk scene of, like, you know, Sam Rockwell, like, hugging, like, affectionately this, like, 13-year-old kid and not have it be either weird or, like, forced at it. Like, no, so yeah. That, to me, was what, like, that scene sort of reinforced that the movie worked for me because I bought into that scene and liked it, you know?
Yeah.
I definitely liked the movie more once they established the water park. But it's so dislikable every time Steve Carell is on. I just enjoyed Steve Carell eating it up.
I suppose. Like, I enjoy, you know, it's a villain, and, like, you sort of can enjoy the villain performance.
To me, I didn't look at it as black and white. I thought it was sort of portraying, like, a family dynamic where it's going to have nuances of character, and if he's going to be this big jerk at the beginning, there's going to be some levels of his behavior, but he's always on that note throughout. So that every time he comes on screen, I'm like, oh no, we have to go through, you get it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have that experience because at first I thought the story, I didn't know much about the movie going in. I thought the story was going to be about Steve Carell and the kid. I didn't even know Sam Rockwell was, like, in the movie.
Right.
That Steve Carell and the kid would come to, like, a relationship. Like,
that's what I thought the movie was going to be. And then the water park shows up, and I'm like, oh, yeah, now I remember that there was a water park in this movie. And so, in that respect, I know what you're saying. You can argue that it was, like, Steve Carell was kind of doing this, like, one-note thing, but I didn't experience that. I actually experienced it was sort of a surprise that he got worse. And especially because it's Steve Carell, too,
right,
which
exactly.
He never plays this role.
No, and I will say that, too. Like,
well, that's probably why I was attracted to it, but I still didn't think.
I found it to be more awful in retrospect. Like, I found it to kind of be this, like, bad attempt. Like, you got that the guy's bad, but I found it to be kind of funny and not. I wasn't totally sure that Steve Carell was, like, a total dick. And, like,
yeah,
but
I
Steve
agree.
Carell,
however,
like,
I will say
goes, so, yeah. You know, there is the path worse. Where he gets worse and worse, and I kind of enjoyed that.
I told Andy this a little bit. I went and tried to go see a morning matinee, but I misread the time. I didn't see that there was a 10 a.m. showing, so the next one is 11:30 or so, and then the only matinee price is at 10 a.m., so already it's, like, $13 mm-hmm. for this movie, and it got me thinking about, like, sort of Netflix for a month is $13. This is, like, a DVD mm-hmm. movie. Like, I didn't need to see this in the theater. And then it being, is this the state of Sundance at this point? These are the movies of Sundance?
I mean,
and it has
been
for a while.
This movie, though, is very obviously has, like, commercial value. Like, this is, like, this is, like, good for Sundance.
Oh, no, this was the, I mean, this,
like,
was the biggest sale at Sundance.
Yeah, this is, like,
But I mean, I feel like this is completely mainstream and has all these notable actors. I mean, is this, this is the the independent voice? This is an independent movie?
No, but you're conflating it, you know, like Sundance, like commercial, you know, the powers that be go there and like decide which movies they think there have the most commercial appeal. There's also like super indie, you know, smaller movies that won't get a theatrical release that you kind of have to know about to find. So to me, it's not, it doesn't say anything about necessarily the state of indie movie makers. I mean, you also have a movie like Beasts of the Southern Wild that was out last year. That was the Sundance movie that ended up, you know, becoming a hit, and like for a hit, I'll bet for an indie movie, and like is a, you know, totally different kind of movie. So to me, it's like they're like Sundance does a lot of these movies, or the people, you know, or they show them, or the people who, you know, make them. It's this kind of movie, and I like a lot of them, but I think it'd be wrong to say that, you know, that's what like Sundance and American indie cinema is.
I mean, it seems like more and more of the movies that are featured and come out of Sundance are sort of this level of dramedy or...
But it's been that way for 10 years.
The movie that you're kind of talking about is Little Miss Sunshine, right? Because here's Little Miss Sunshine...
Fine. And I think maybe the producers of that produced this.
I mean, this is marketed as like Little Miss Sunshine, Juno, in that vein of sense. But the thing with Little Miss Sunshine, which... it's sort of like, okay, so the studios have sort of ceased to make these sort of $15 to $30 million dramedies, or, you know, these kind of, yeah, dramedies basically, except for like the AA list directors if they want to do it. So then you get a movie like Little Miss Sunshine, which now falls to the Sundance space. And yeah, it's not like an art movie. It's a very commercial mainstream movie, but... I guess that's sort of the issue, and you're saying Sundance should not be in that space, and I guess I don't understand.
I feel by putting I'll put a formulaic coming-of-age story, and now that is taking over for what is in Sundance. That means other...
Well, no, that's a really, I mean, this is ignorant.
This is a coming of age genre, but and I didn't find it breaking.
But it's
form
been that way for
anything.
20 years at Sundance, like coming of age thing.
And also, you could say, John Hughes movies formulaic coming of age movies? Yeah, they are, but people like.
If this movie is now taking up Sundance spots, that is lessening what other movies that could have no shot.
Well, it's because they're not as good as this.
Yeah,
they don't get it.
Film festivals, the movies are not like, it's not like there's some, I think there's this idea that there's some like profound movies out there that are getting overlooked. I just don't see evidence of that really.
But maybe there's no distribution for them to be out.
Well, I mean, you know, you're complaining.
That's a theory.
Like, I guess I just hear this like complaining that this is what you get from Sundance. Like, if you want more from Sundance, you read about it. All these movies are available, and you watch them. And you have your own, you know, festival. They're all on.
So you're saying go to video and...
Well, no, they get small theatrical releases, or they're on demand. Like, right now, most of them go to on demand, and they might go to a theater in L.A. for a week, if that. And, like, those are, you know, you find them there. And so it's like, I don't know, to complain that...
Well,
there's
this
not
gets
a variety
the
of movies
release.
Out at Sun. Well, it gets a theatrical release because somebody decided it had commercial value.
But, like, I'm just trying to see
these other movies are widely available in,
on DVD. Yeah. You mean? Because I don't think they're widely available nationwide in the theater
for a reason. Because people wouldn't pay to go see them. Like, you know, they would be available if people would go see them. But there's like people try to release them, and it happens, and then they don't make money, and then. Then it affects, like, okay, what movies are we going to try to release next time? So, you know, it's just a cycle, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, that Terrence Malick To the Wonder movie, I think they tried to release that, and then I don't think anyone went and saw it, and then they took it out of the theater. I mean, that, I think that's pretty just routine for a lot of indie movies. Like, if, whatever, they just don't... hit the zeitgeist or connect, and some do. I mean, we talked about Spring Breakers, and I mean, there's some other movies that do just, they hit and they find existence. I mean, I even talked about it last week with that documentary, Stories.
Yeah, Stories We Tell. That's, I mean, been like out a word of mouth, like long-running thing.
Yeah, I mean, it came out, it just, you know, I don't know, I didn't think it, I don't know.
I mean, Mud's another Sundance movie that got picked up, and it might have had some distribution in place before, and I don't know, but it was, like, it's in that world of, you know, Sundance and, like, probably a similar budget level to the Way, Way Back and stuff. So, like, some of these are obviously are getting out there. But, yeah, it's not, I guess my point is, like, what's, I mean, it's obvious, yeah, these movies have some stars, and so they're going to get bigger releases. Like, I don't know what your, like, what point or criticism you're trying to make about the state of American indie cinema that isn't, like, maybe a little bit obvious or has been that way for 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, it has been that way for 10 years. But, yeah, just found it interesting to be like, yeah, I could watch so many. I guess it was also, the $13 for this movie just didn't seem, like, worth it.
I've brought up this point before, and I sort of, one thing I think was a little bit unfair that I don't think we give credit for is that, you know, when you're going, and this is so obvious, but when you're going out to a movie, you're sort of going out and having a night out and, like, potentially going on a date or going hanging out with friends. It's a different experience than just watching it on DVD. So, I mean, part of the thing that you're paying for is that whole experience to be out amongst the public. I mean, we saw it together, Andy, like a group of us. And I mean, you know, the Friday night, the Arclight was packed with people. I mean, I actually thought it was like a really fun time. I didn't feel like ripped off, and we paid more than $13 per ticket for it.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is, you know, I guess I think you guys have brought up like the ticket price stuff and all this thing before, and, you know, I don't have a lot of sympathy for it because I think there's so many ways to, like, you know, still watch movies for cheap and stuff and figure it out. And we live in one of the most expensive cities in the world. So, like, yeah, we happen to have a habit that's a little expensive more so to keep in this city, but we also have more access to movies. Yeah. And so it's sort of like, well, you know, you're paying for that.
I remember when I was a kid, right? The movies costing $7 when you went out.
Okay? At nighttime. And matinees were cheaper than that.
Yeah. But $7, can I
remind you guys that was 20 years
ago? That's what I'm saying. And so over that time, the fact that prices have doubled is actually probably not abnormal.
Right, and they, like, haven't doubled. You're talking about, you know, we went to see this at the Arclight, $15. That's the most expensive, one of the most expensive, outside of New York, it's the most expensive theater in the country.
Right, although I'm even talking about a theater where I grew up that is a big theater, that's expensive too.
Right.
And yeah, right, so it's maybe $1. My point being is that I'm basically agreeing with you that, right, like, inflation-wise, I actually do think that's basically, I think that's normal. I mean, I don't know.
I think the movies, I feel like they're, you know, in line, and I do feel like we're a little bit, we felt it a little bit more, and I feel it, you know, certainly because, like, if we want to, like, our art houses in LA are the most expensive theaters in a way, like the Arclight and the Landmark, and so, like, the smaller, you know, art house theaters, like the Lemley ones that used to be cheaper, have kind of lost a lot of their business, and so we used to feel like we'd be paying less because you go to these shittier art house theaters, and now if you want to go see these art movies, you got to go to the Arclight and spend more, and so there's, like, a weird, like, disconnect there that's probably not totally right, but I think it has a lot to do with we're living in a bigger city and, you know, people realize how they have more money and they're going
to
spend it.
Going to a baseball game is expensive. Right. Everything's expensive. So
if you're paying $13 for a month of Netflix, how are you going to get people out to a movie like this if it's also $13? It doesn't seem equivalent to my mind. Like,
how many
movies
do you think most people rent a month
than
Netflix?
I think more and more people will see something that could be playing in the theater and be like, I'm just going to wait for it to be on Netflix streaming. I do think that's happening more and more.
But I'm saying it's not the same. It's not
Of course, it's not the same experience.
Yeah.
But I'm saying one like this one movie, which for me would have played fine on TV, it wasn't per se a theatrical movie, is the equivalent of a month of unlimited movies from home. It was just an interesting
marker,
yeah. Marker when I went to the theater. Because I had just
done... Yeah, but this has been a big question. You know, it's like the question of, you know, filmmaking and theatrical stuff, you know, since, you know, Netflix has come about and other things of like, yeah, getting people out to theater is harder. And, I mean, it's not going to change.
So this, like, Man of Steel, though, I didn't like... I mean, that seems... That's a huge, huge movie, and you can sort of see it up on the screen.
I would say, though, this level of movie... I mean,
this could be watched, like, this is, for me, yeah, very happy if I come home and HBO or
but this
is playing and I can
just watch it. This is exactly the opposite of position of what you talked about last week, that, you know, you care more about going to the theater and getting sort of, like, an emotional experience, that you don't care about how much money went into mm-hmm. making the movie. What
right.
matters is the experience of watching the movie. And this movie, like... Maybe you don't like it or whatever, but that's, I think, a sort of execution thing. This movie doesn't seem to be out of the realm because you have basically A-list or B-list actors in it, and sort of a high level, you know, a pretty, at least a professional level of craft going on. This isn't like some strange ripoff. I don't see this as being like sort of out of the realm of what's accepted as, you know, what you expect out of a movie, basically.
Like a little, like trying to have it, you know, both ways for you where, you know, you're saying you're sick of these spectacle movies, but then you're also saying, like, you understand why that's what people are going to see. So I don't understand, you know, the point or, you know, I guess I'm just general dissatisfaction, frustration with the movie industry to me is... doesn't parlay into like an interesting take on it. It's just sort of like, yeah, well, that's what it is. I guess, you know, are you saying you're done with the movies or like, I don't know what you're, you know, trying to get at.
I mean, I'm just sort of in this gray area. There's something like off and maybe not off, but it's in such flux that I do think that there's, say, a limited amount of people's budget for, like, entertainment. And a movie like the Way, Way Back for $13, I think it'll stop people, and I think it already is starting to stop people from going to the movies as a habit.
Well, yeah,
it's
that's
just
sure well,
that's
already happening.
That is,
you know
people are going to the movies less. That's without question. It
yeah.
could have
yeah.
to do with price. It could have to do with the quality of the movies. Could have to do with competition from other sources. It's but, tough to say. Yeah, nobody knows, really, I don't think.
Yeah, I feel like it's like the big question, but I mean, we talked about it on the podcast last time, too, the state of the movies, and, you know, it's just a little bit, I guess maybe I've gotten a little tired of the rhetoric or something. And yeah, it is, and on one hand it's like it feels like a lot's in flux. On the other, I'm like, you know, I still like going to the movies. People are still making movies. I'm still going to try to make movies. And so, you know, you stick with it. I'm not some prophet who knows the way it's going to be. I'm not going to be the person who figures it out, or, you know, so it's sort of like stick with what you want to do and what you like going to see. And, you know, it's changing, sure.
People will more and more just pick out the few films that they really think they're gonna like instead of taking maybe a greater risk at seeing something they don't like. That's the concern when the prices get too much, is that you stop taking a chance on going to see.
Well, that's also film. You know, critic aggregates like Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic now, where people reference that all the time of like what it like. I hear it just, you know, in non-film people conversations all the time of what a movie got on Rotten Tomatoes, and that totally affects whether they'll go see a smaller movie. Like, that's a huge thing for a smaller movie. Like, if it's not above a certain percentage on Rotten Tomatoes, like above 80%, it's not going to get people going, and like the word of mouth, it's like just an obvious thing. So like, I think that's affected it just as much. And yeah, like, you know, part of me worries that movies might become more of this like the art or indie movie scene might become more of like what you see with theatrical, you know, type high culture things where they cost more and they're congregated in bigger cities and, you know, maybe more complex ideas or just, you know, highfalutin, and so people will pay more for it, but I don't know.
You know what's funny is, like, I was thinking about this because we brought it up last week.
Yeah.
I was like, what evidence is there that that would happen?
Like the George Lucas $50 model?
There's really no evidence that it's headed that way at all.
No.
And so I actually don't quite get, and I'm like, why would the movie industry
want less
people?
No, but he was talking about Spectre. I'm talking about art film. Like, I'm actually talking a little different where, like, we've seen now.
But it already is that way. I mean, certain films only get released in New York and L.A.
Right,
and
then, and because the theaters are more expensive there that show these art movies, and, you know, they end up costing more to the people who want to go see them in those cities. It's like a weird, it's sort of an interesting thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But.
I do think the spectacle thing will happen.
But why?
Because I think there's such a built-in audience for some of these grand movies
that they can charge. My point is it already has happened. Like, yeah. IMAX 3D, if you go to Universal City, I mean, it'll cost $20, I think, to go see those movies.
And I think
they'll
raise it.
Yeah, it probably will. As like, you know, but that's a, you know, it's like, why not? I don't know.
But the whole point of all these movies is the broadness. They want tons of people to see them. So,
right.
Oh, right.
But people will go to that one movie
$40. Yeah. But that's a small percentage. Like, that's going to exist. But the majority of people who are still going to see, you know, Man of Steel or whatever are seeing it just at the normal, you know, $10 cost, 2D, whatever it is. Like,
But also, all around the world, I think they show these movies. Like, I mean, China's, like, a big market and stuff. I think they don't, I doubt it costs as much to go see it in China, you know, just because of weight, prices and stuff. But I'm sure it's much cheaper. And I guess I don't know. Like, because once you've created a movie, it's all sunk cost, right? And then you just want to sort of, many people to see it as possible and as many people to pay.
I think you want to get your money back and make money. So the best way to do that, they'll do a balance sheet of, is it better? They'll just have analytics going on of, is it better to have so many people see it at this price versus, they don't care how many people see it.
But it's like, for instance, like, I'll just give a random weird example, like Coca-Cola, right? Coca-Cola could raise their price to like $8 a Coke and a lot less people would buy Cokes, but some people would still buy Cokes. But Coke is like, I don't want to do that. I'd rather sell it to way more people for 50 cents a quarter, you know, and they charge more at like certain things. I feel like movies are going to do the same thing. So it doesn't make sense to me, this sort of idea that all these movies would suddenly become $50 and that's the only way people would watch movies. I mean, it just seems like a weird sort of prediction because it's not happening. It's never happened. So why predict? It just doesn't.
I guess I would say it is happening with the IMAX 3D. I mean, it's not $50, but certainly. Yeah.
It's like, they're paying extra for the IMAX grand scale.
Yeah.
And so
But then there's no evidence that makes everything else go away.
Right. Absolutely. I'm saying I don't think it will. I'm saying if, you know, you might see those prices go up and stuff, you know, to try to, because people will pay a high premium for that, but I don't know.
Yeah, anyways, it was just a thought that I, you know, it seemed, anyways.
Well, we went and saw this, Phil and I went and saw This Is the End.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you know, that's like a very kind of, like, weird movie to throw into the summer movie mix. And, one that I liked a lot and like had a lot of fun at, and I mean, I don't know that that we'll dive back in and like, you know, talk much about it, but
that was it's funny you mentioned that film because I had forgotten I saw it, but during the theater I was having a good time, and then I got out of the theater and I almost had forgotten I'd seen the movie. Like, it didn't have any sort of staying power. I've forgotten what we even see it, but I was laughing a lot.
Yeah.
That's another one. Like, I guess I could just bring this up so many times, but is gets boring after a while. But yeah, it's like,
yeah, it's that worth it? It's already boring before you see it. I mean, like, you paid to go see it. Tons of, like, that movie's a bona fide hit, and you're asking the question whether people are paid. Like,
no, I'm not asking if people are paying. I'm saying, is it worth it for I guess, just for me to...
Right, but you have really specific set of circumstances in your life right now where you're maybe considering these, like... the price of a movie ticket more, and you're conflating that into this larger world that everybody else is dealing with the same thing, and they're not.
Not everyone, but some people.
Sure, but some people are always dealing with that thing.
I tried to go see that movie like 2 weeks ago, and it was sold out. This is the end. And also, part of what I think your complaint about this movie and Sundance movies is about the lack of sort of boldness or in ideas. And This Is the End actually is a pretty like out there experimental idea.
Yeah.
For a movie, I mean.
Yeah. For a wide release movie, I mean, yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, to look back on this movie being made 20 years from now, it's going to be like, wow, that is a weird cultural artifact, you know? Yeah.
What I'm trying to get at with a Sundance, I don't know if I want to get into it fully. Where are the young American voices and new filmmakers?
Well, but why would that be Sundance's fault? That's the filmmakers.
It's just, for me, it feels like, and granted, I haven't seen Fruitvale Station yet, so maybe.
You know, American filmmakers.
But they don't let, I mean, they haven't risen.
But Phil, what I'm saying is, you're not seeing these movies. Like, I hate to, like, I don't want to be a calling out, but you're not seeing these. You're not trying to. Okay, sure. You know, I mean, these are the names you just roll off the head, or the, you know, the mumblecore folk, Joe Swanberg, Andrew Wachowski. Like, but yeah, well, you're not, you know, talking about. So you are seeing these movies. So it's like, I don't, you know, and those are just a few names. I mean, you have all these like younger horror guys. I mean, there's still tons of like young American filmmakers making movies. You got the guy Beasts of Southern Wild. You know, I don't know. I guess. Like, I see this nostalgic thing that you're just still upset that it's not, you know, 1970 and Scorsese and guys are running around suddenly with some control to make some movies. And it's just, you know, that's not what it is. You know, I don't know. You know, is that what you're saying? Like,
Other movies. I tried to see This Is the End and couldn't get in. So I saw The Heat, which is... okay, and I saw White House Down, which was...
This sounds like a parody list of movies to me, but yeah, go on. I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I go to see I try to go see the movies. I mean, and that's sort of what, you know, the podcast is about.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
I feel a little beaten down.
Well, I beat you down. I've been hard on you because I feel like...
I wanted to bring up something else, but we'll see.
You know, this is like, you know, it's a topic that I guess I'm, you know, you're frustrated one way and I'm frustrated in another of like, just hearing like a general malaise complaint. It's sort of like, yeah, because things change, you know, it's sort of, you know, we might all want things to be, you know, the way we, I don't know. There's like, I've certainly brought up before this, you know, creep of nostalgia about...
I saw. I watched.
It's not nostalgia wanting to see movies in the theater, but I feel more and more, at least what's in the theater, is not very good or interesting.
A lot of people feel that the movies aren't that good right now. Yeah. And that happens. It ebbs and flows. I mean, I don't know. That's just life. But like, I saw a funny bit on Portlandia the other night where Roseanne Barr like becomes the new mayor of Portland, and she's being led around by like Fred Armiston or whatever. And there's a theater showing Rosemary's Baby, and she looks at it and she goes, "Wasn't that movie like from the '60s or something?" And they're like, "It's a film. Yeah, we could go see it." And she's like, "It was just like this funny bit of like." The Portland people being all like looking at these old nostalgia movie, and she was just having this like, why would anyone think about Rosemary's Baby? And it was a very funny just like bit. Yeah, it's sort of like, nostalgia has its place, but at the same time, you know,
I don't know. You guys are bringing up nostalgia and with such a negative connotation to it too. I don't think it's a nostalgia thing. It's me and Andy go... to last night we saw Shakespeare in the Park, And these people are, like, acting their ass off. It's a beautiful, scenic, and it's entertainment. It's another form of entertainment. And there was sort of, like, for me, some inspiration and magic and just the whole setting and that this is being put on. And then I compare it to going to the way, way back.
Well, can I ask a separate question? How is it different from, you know, people that watch basketball, you know, and say, oh, these guys, I hate how these guys play basketball now. They don't play defense like the 80s. Like, it's just, it's not the same game. Right. I can't stand LeBron and Michael Jordan and Larry Bird were so much better. And, like, we're not as invested, say, in sports as we are in movies. And but when I hear those people talk, it's like, who? I'm sort of like, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? Enjoy the fact that LeBron is playing awesome right now and the NBA is in an interesting place. And look, the NBA is really interesting right now compared to what it was maybe to me during the Shaq and Kobe dominating era. I just think there's more stars and more interesting. And I feel like that's movies too. Like, every now and then there's interesting stars that come out. Yeah, maybe we're in a little lull right now. I don't know. I guess that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, how is it different than that?
The game has changed. So, like, movies has changed. We grew up with a different kind of movie, a different kind of theatrical going experience. And, like, is...
Maybe for me, then, the theatrical experience will wane. And I'll watch a lot more.
What I'm saying is kids who maybe are going to movies right now
will stay at home.
Or maybe they're, you know, wide-eyed and enjoying these comic book movies the way we enjoyed movies before. And, like, you know, you grow older, things move past you. And, like, I guess to me it's like, yes, I still like a lot of movies I go see at the theater. So, yeah, certainly these big budget movies and everything, you know, bother me. But I don't know, I just find it, you know, you can kind of complain and do all this. Yeah, it's in flux. A lot of, all entertainment is kind of in flux. It's a really weird time, but that, I don't know. I guess people are going to make movies, I guess, is my point.
Another moviegoers?
Yeah.
All right.
And enjoy. We'll talk to you later on.
The movies.